And now may the words of my mouth, the meditation of all of our hearts, be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. Please be seated. In a few moments, we'll be able to say thanks, I believe, to Gigi and Hala, who are going to take up the offertory for us this day. It's a blessing to see people who've been baptized in this church giving back to this church in their service and ministries. The religious tradition in which I grew up did not baptize babies, and at least in North America, did not include godparents. I love that designation, godparents. But I must have grown up reading too many fairy tales, because I've never quite escaped the image of three magical beings gathered around a bassinet waiting to bestow gifts and blessings. Mel and I had the privilege of being included in our first ever American Thanksgiving this week. And I have to say, the bar has been set very high for subsequent ones. But Thanksgiving, this day on which a nation gives thanks for the blessings of freedom and faith and family, I think leads one naturally to rather more than usual personal introspection. Today's gospel also takes me there, and I'm going to try and tell you why. My husband and I were dedicated as infants, and words of a hymn that is often used in dedication reinforce this image of the godparents standing around the cradle. The congregation would sing as a prayer, "This I will ask for you. God grant each day wisdom to know his will, grace to obey." In the denomination in which we grew up, the way that will was understood was very simple and was unapologetically definite. The words of Jesus that we read this morning from Matthew 25 were read all the time. They were on the walls of our churches. They were on our logos. They were on our strategic banners. They were on the t-shirts we wore when we were camp counselors. They were tattooed on your heart, on our hearts, if you like. This simple and most spare of religious creeds: I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. In stranger, in prison, sick. And inasmuch as you have done it unto one of the least of these my brethren, you have done it to me. Now, I am not for a moment claiming today that the Salvation Army was any better at doing this than any other Christian, or for that matter, non-Christian body, but there was absolutely no missing the criteria of what counted. Yet again, the subject of the text this morning is judgment. I said to Mel, I've always been here in November. I roll in on a wave of texts of judgment. I do sometimes preach on something other than this. But this day of reckoning that is to come at the denouement of human history, when nations, Jews, Gentiles, every one of us are called to account, and when distinctions are drawn between those who have lived well and those who have not, both groups are taken aback. Both the sheep and the goats are shocked. Both had expected they'd be measured by a different set of criteria. It turns out, according to this gospel, judgment is not a matter of the obviously good or bad. It is absolutely not a matter of being evaluated on what we believe or know, and not on the basis of how one worships or prays. Matthew's gospel simply notes that some, when the opportunity to help came along, did so. Some helped the least, the not noticed ones, those who are off the radar of our personal social screens. Both groups, the sheep and the goats, ask when. The sheep are commended for their unself-conscious care. The goats are accused of unconscious neglect. So strange, isn't it, that it seems to be the things they forgot about that mattered, the things that just flowed naturally from who they were. The sheep were doing what came naturally, or was it? Now here's the tricky bit this morning. There's no denying that there are some, I'm sure, uniquely saintly souls among us this morning. But more of us have a fair bit of goat in there too. Trinette helped me with this week when we were having a conversation. Unlike our canine companions who would do anything to keep us happy, according to Trinette, a goat has absolutely no interest in what we think or care about at all. I've decided that henceforth I'm going to be thinking of them as the hedonists of the farmyard. Most of us need the words of St. Paul or resonate with them. He wrote in the epistle, "The law is good, the trouble's not with the law, but with me. I don't understand myself at all, for I really want to do what's right, but I don't do it." It seems there's some work that needs to happen in us before we are able to be sheep, sources of unselfconscious blessing. How does this new naturalness come about? This new state of the heart, this new normal, like the new normal after grief. If Matthew's simple code is in fact a blueprint for what the authentic Christian life is all about, I realized with a start that in my own life, the two most useful preparations for ministry, for the ministry we all share, were also the simplest. They were gifts at the cradle of spiritual development. Not in the years and years of university and graduate school, but again, for the simplest of creeds, the simplest of formation. The first, that when we were students, every day had to start with an hour of non-negotiable silence. As Richard Rohr said, daily contemplative prayer is crucial to help me live in the now. It takes intention and practice to remain open and awake to the moment. And the second, that every Friday night, we were dispatched to the streets of downtown Toronto on what was called the Midnight Patrol, and we had to fill the hours of the night in random acts of kindness. That kind of spiritual foundation formation is not new. It was what was practiced by the Celtic monks and the Franciscans and Dorothy Day. There's always been recognition that we all need some help in training our souls, our spirits, like building the walls of a canal through which the transforming, healing love of God can flow. We look at Ombeline, we look at Mikal, and we say, oh, what a natural talent they have, overlooking the hours they have spent on scales. We look at a surgeon and his facility in the OR and overlook the hours learning to tie and practice suture. Do I still spend time every day in silence with God? Not often enough, but often enough to know what a profound difference it makes. And many nights I went out muttering into the cold, as I'm sure you do when you're called upon to be a good neighbor, irritated, busy, even cynical. I can't remember often coming home that way. Rather, I knew the weekly joy of meeting almost so always so much more received than given. And so to conclude, it seems to me that this place, this island, surely invites this kind of openness to the holy, to the cultivation of the habits of the heart, the night sky over the ocean, this community that cares the pure beauty of the Tuesday evening Teze service. This place is infused with the presence of our shepherd who longs to be heard. His words, "Listen, my sheep hear my voice. I know them, and they follow me." May God grant us hearts to hear. Amen.